This is Studio 395, a production of the Department of History at James Madison University and its Historical Research Methods course, History 395. My name is Kaylee Callis. Today I am here with Maggie Pasha, author of In a Queer Place, where she summarizes and interprets various films throughout the 1970s and their representation and likely misrepresentation of the LGBTQ community. In the early decades of Hollywood media, homosexuals were both subtly and negatively portrayed. As Hollywood attempted to appeal to their predominantly heterosexual audience in mid-20th century, homosexuals often suffered from warped misrepresentation, usually exhibiting misery, villainous, weak illustrations of the LGBTQ community. As the civil rights movement intensified in the late 1960s, the Stonewall Riots, one of many unjustified police raids on the Stonewall Inn, a gay club located in New York City, sparked the gay liberation movement officially. Homosexuals, among other minorities of the time, too, demanded equality and representation within all realms of society, politically, economically, and yes, even in media, which forever changed Hollywood film. Today, Maggie Pasha has joined us to discuss her outstanding paper. Thank you so much for taking the time. I would just like to start with your historical context mentions the Hays Code. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about that and its importance and what happened with its abandonment?
Sure. The Hays Code was the moral censor of Hollywood beginning in about the 1920s. There was a committee that approved films for release. So if a studio wanted to release a film, they submit it to the committee. The committee says yes or no, and then if the studio decided to release the film without the committee's approval for the first part of the 20th century, it was basically doomed to failure. However, the code's power in the 50s especially began to weaken when people increasingly went to see foreign films or films that were not approved by the committee. So it eventually was just abandoned in favor of a rating system similar to the one that we have today, which didn't explicitly prohibit depictions of homosexuality, which the Hays Code had previously.
Perfect. Yes. Interesting. So with that being said, mm-hmm. You continue your paper through a series of films that you analyzed, and you started with the James Bond film Diamonds Are Forever. Can you explain to me a little bit why you chose this one to start off with?
Well, I decided to pick Diamonds Are Forever to start with because it has two gay characters. It also represents a continuation of this heterosexist fantasy franchise, and I think it can be taken as fairly typical of Hollywood films that represented gay people up until this point. So I sort of wanted to examine it as a lens into what representation had been and sort of what people weren't doing to mm-hmm. move forward, if that mm-hmm. makes any sense.
Right. Your transition from Diamonds Are Forever mm-hmm. into
A Very Natural Thing. Right.
They're extremely different representations of homosexuals in society, literally day and night.
Right.
So explain to me the subtle nature of, the villainous nature of homosexuals transition to A Very Natural Thing, where it's like, if you're not out of the closet, it's not a good thing, it's
right.
a bad thing.
Exactly.
So how did you manage to do that?
Well, A Very Natural Thing, I think, came out of this ethos of gay liberation, and to be involved in gay liberation, to be involved in that project, in that movement, one basically had to be out of the closet. So that's why that's such an important part of that film. And the one thing about A Very Natural Thing that didn't actually end up bearing out was that it was supposed to be distributed to art house theaters, so to be widely available to queer audiences. Unfortunately, this didn't happen, and it had distribution problems. So that's kind of where A Very Natural Thing was intended to go, what it was intended to do from its conception.
Right. And it's interesting that the Hays Code was also lifted right before this gay liberation
yes.
and the civil rights movement
right.
and all of that interesting turn of events.
Yeah, I think so.
Your next film from a natural...
After a natural thing
is Dog Days Afternoon.
Yes.
And this actually gets into the theme of transgender.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you choose this film? Was it kind of to show another perspective or layer of the LGBTQ community you wanted to analyze?
Yes, in part. It's one of the first popular major studio films that portrays a transgender character. So I think that's a kind of an important piece of history almost to examine. It also, for a major studio film, it does an admirable job of normalizing a queer identities. It has a queer protagonist who's portrayed as something of a hero. At the same time, A Dog Day Afternoon also had to be acceptable to its heterosexist audiences, and in the process, the protagonist's queerness ended up kind of being not erased, but it was not really prominent at all.
Right.
So I think Dog Day Afternoon is a really good example of the balancing act that Hollywood was trying to manage at that time, both acknowledging and representing gay communities while at the same time still being able to hold on to their previous audiences.
Right. And you said in your paper that Sunny, the character, was only technically gay when you met his transgender partner.
Right, exactly.
So it is interesting that that's just like one little blip of truth, and then otherwise he's not represented as the stereotypical
gay
homosexual
man at all. No, he doesn't act out any gay stereotypes at all, and he's only gay or queer or however in his relationship with Leon, his partner. So I think that was one angle the film took in making Sonny's queerness acceptable to its audiences.
Right. And pairing that with making him humane.
Exactly.
Couldn't hurt.
Exactly.
So the last two films you discuss in your paper is Manhattan and Cruising. And Manhattan has this nice, lovely, positive establishment of a lesbian couple raising a child.
Mm-hmm.
And then you move into Cruising, which is completely 100% opposite of that. Can you please explain a little bit what that is?
So the thing with Cruising is it tries to portray a very specific subset of a gay community, the BDSM leather sort of underbelly of New York and its gay communities. And unfortunately, it ends up conflating homosexuality as a whole, in general, and BDSM and murderous violence. So it winds up looking like a film that really condemns, gay men, and it punishes its gay characters for both being gay and for being involved in S&M. It's very unclear about that, and that's part of the film's failure.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's...
Right. You kind of said that it hinted at some ties with violence and homosexuality, but it never answers or never gives full clarification if it's really tying those two things together.
Yes, exactly. It raises these these questions that could be very interesting about the contagious nature of violence and the ghettoization of gay communities, but it never answers those questions. And like I said, its gay characters end up getting punished, even the one who isn't involved in any way with this leather S&M community. He gets murdered, unfortunately. So the film looks like, kind of on the surface, it looks like one that wants to punish its gay characters.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Right. So that was an interesting way to conclude, because it was made in 1980.
Right.
And the previous ones that seems to have made so much progress with homosexual portrayal in the 1970s, it just ends with this one.
Right. The Cruising is by the same director that directed The Boys in the Band, which was sort of considered a landmark film by many for representation of gay men. It very mixed reception from gay people. Straight audiences, straight critics seemed to love it a lot, but mixed reactions from gay people. And so Cruising kind of maybe attempted to do the same thing, explore new ways of representing people, but it failed in that because it wasn't clear. Its failure was in its ambiguity.
Right.
So that's I think what happened with Cruising.
Right. And that's just an interesting way to end that.
Yeah.
And you do conclude your paper saying that the 70s did not provide a clear cut and dry bad to good progression of homosexual portrayal, but there was effort.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate a little bit on what you mean by effort?
Well, films like A Very Natural Thing, Dog Day Afternoon, and Manhattan, I think, are the films that sort of capture that effort by Hollywood to represent gay people in different ways than the previous decades had, in more fair ways, representing more ways of life, portraying these ways of life as acceptable and even positive. So that's what I mean by this attempt at more and better representation. And I mean, as it's people, films and media are still doing that, but there are failures, of course, like Cruising, and I think there's room for more. There's room mm-hmm. for different ways of representing people, and I think that's kind of what I wanted to say with the paper.
Yeah, and what do you think nowadays with media today, and there's a lot more prevalence of homosexual portrayal.
Right.
Do you think that we have improved since the 70s, or do you think it's still pretty stereotypical, or neither?
I absolutely think we do look better now in 2019 than we did 30 or 40 years ago. But, you know, you mentioned stereotypes, and those stereotypes still exist. If those stereotypes are still something that we encounter, they're still something that we have to work over in a representing people, and that's really important that we show people in fair and true ways, because our media influences how individuals see society and individuals around them. So I think that's why it's important to look carefully at the media we consume, and that's why it's important for creators of that media to, you know, make movies mm-hmm. that are fair and true.
Right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Studio 395. More interviews on a wide range of historical topics and subscriptions to our podcast are available on our show page at sites.lib.jmu.edu/studio395. To learn more about the history major at James Madison University, please visit www.jmu.edu/history. Thank you so much.